Hey there, Will Arnett here. Welcome to SmartLess, our podcast where Jason Bateman, Sean Hayes, and I, each week, one of us brings a guest that the other two don't know about. And this week is no exception. We get real into it. Most of the time, we just mess around with each other, and then the guest has to be embarrassed. So let's get right to the podcast. SmartLess.
I have a t-shirt on today that says Camaro.
And you know that that's a car, right? That's not like a brand of olive oil or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Camaro, it's a domestic car.
Okay, made in the United States.
Yeah. Who of the three of us was the last person to drive through a McDonald's, Burger King type of thing?
Sean, not yesterday. He didn't drive through yesterday, but I know that he had fast food yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, so you go in and you sit down, you bring your own placemat and stuff like that?
No.
Make a night of it?
Could you imagine?
Scotty, get dressed.
Yeah, we're going out.
Where did you go?
I went to Burger Lounge because I like their burgers.
That's not fast food.
Oh, I didn't know you were going to Burger Lounge. That's so good. I love
that
place.
Isn't it the best?
Oh, my God.
No, fast food, I'd probably go once every couple months.
Really? And where's your go-to?
McDonald's.
Uh-huh. And what do you get?
I get a Big Mac, no pickle, a 6-piece McNugget with sweet and sour sauce, a small fry, and then maybe a root beer.
And that's just for one person?
And that's just for me.
Wait, what dipping sauce do you do with the?
This is fascinating. I do sweet and sour.
Sure you do.
Wait, Jason, tell me that you don't do fast food.
I don't do fast food.
Ever.
I haven't had fast food in years, but it doesn't mean I wouldn't if we were to hang out.
Yeah, let's do it. Well, you go to the Dodgers game and you eat a hot dog.
Oh, yeah. I have Dodger dogs. I don't know if that counts. That's actually...
You do have Dodger dogs.
I do have Dodger. Well, I have the veggie dogs. God, I'm so... I hate myself. Listen, today we're going to try something a little bit different. All right? We usually have a guest that will educate us about their field. But today we are going to explore more of the human condition. Our guest today has lived a very eclectic life that has taken him through the dangerous seas of the South Pacific and the complicated world of Washington, D.C. He has wrestled the powerful forces of the healthcare industry, written a children's book. He's inspired millions and also infuriated thousands. He has never learned to swim, but he is one of our country's greatest fisherman. He suffers from narcolepsy, but his work exists mostly at night. Ladies and gentlemen, Will and Sean, you know him from such films as Delinquents Derby, Brad Status, and of course, 2015's The Heyday of Insensitive Bastards. I want you to please give a very warm, SmartLess welcome to Mr. James Christian Kimmel.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Hi, guys.
That was an unbelievable misdirect.
Yeah, that was a really good intro.
It was. I am a pretty good swimmer, but other than that, everything was
That's
right.
That's the one untruth in there.
You really can't swim, by the way?
No, I can swim.
He's a great swimmer.
Oh, all right.
I've been listening to this podcast, by the way. I've listened to all the episodes. And
I apologize.
I love it. I really do. I enjoy it.
Really?
I am not typically a person who listens to podcasts because I do not have the time to do it. I mainly listen for the AutoZone commercials. and I like the mental health commercials where you guys suddenly get real serious right in the middle of a funny conversation.
Yeah, you don't F around with that. And I love that we actually bundled the mental health spot against the become a lord spot where you can you can buy a square foot of land and those ran back to back.
I am actually signed up for that, too. I am now Lord Lady of Kimmel.
So you bought two squares, a Lord and a Lady square?
Yeah, why not? I mean, what the heck? Yeah.
All right. So is the narcolepsy true?
It is true.
Honestly?
Yeah.
You suffer from narcolepsy and you take a one pill for and you don't have to worry about falling asleep when you're at a red light.
Wait, that's when you just fall asleep at any random time?
Yeah. My doctor diagnosed it. I have fallen asleep at red lights. I was once yelled at by a police officer at a red light. The police officer suddenly used that speaker and said, "Are you awake enough to operate that motor vehicle?" And I looked over and said, "I am now." For years, I took a pill every day called Provigil.
Uh-huh.
And then I decided to stop taking it. And now I just drink a lot of coffee.
And so there's no risk of when you're tooling down the road with Molly and the kids in the back, you just nodding off and taking the family into a light post.
It's more difficult when I'm alone, but...
Because Molly will keep you up. The kids will keep you up when you're driving.
I will say I love having narcolepsy. I wouldn't trade it if I had the chance because I fall asleep within 4 minutes. I lay down and I am out. And my wife hates it.
I have the opposite problem.
Yeah, well, it's because of the crazy McDonald's menu order that you have.
Constantly.
It's insane.
That's healthy at 50, right?
It's healthy anytime.
All right, so with the caveat that the only professional interviewer on this is Jimmy, here come my crappy questions.
Okay,
I've combed through your.
And by the way, this, for Jason to comb through something, he's admitted many times he hasn't combed through his own hair since he was 11. So for him to comb through anything is big.
You really are becoming Teen Wolf.
Oh God. okay, so you were raised Catholic and as a child was also an altar boy. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was. That is correct.
All right, let's jump right into religion.
Okay.
How big is religion in your life? Is it big, small, or medium?
Well, it is. I definitely am a religious person. I believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. I don't force it on others. It's somewhere below, like... I guess it would go like pizza, the right. Mets,
yep.
You know, Catholicism. Christ. I don't know. Maybe even it might even be below tacos. I'm not sure.
But I
was an altar boy for 7 years, far, far too long. I was starting to grow breasts. I was still an altar boy.
How old were you when religion entered your life? Was it you like from birth, right? Your parents?
Yeah,
were
I mean, I was baptized. So I guess right at that very moment, a few days after my birth.
And how many siblings?
I have two siblings, a brother and a sister. I'm the oldest. I grew up mostly in Las Vegas. I had a priest there named Father Bill, with whom I'm still very friendly.
Okay.
And one night at dinner, when this was years ago when the Catholic Church was experiencing a lot of controversy as a result
what
of
happened?
All these molestations. It didn't get up to Canada, I guess. But we had some trouble. And at dinner one night in Las Vegas with a large group of friends, I loudly and angrily demanded to know why Father Bill had never molested me. I wasn't good enough for you.
But he wants you on his podcast. All right. I'm moving on to the next thing I found in my dirty comb. You're a real prankster, it sounds like here. There's several stunts on air, including one that led to an $8,000 loss in advertising. Do you have any recollection of what that might be?
What is that?
When I was on the radio, you mean?
Yeah. This was during the Me and Him show on KZOK. And
you glanced at my Wikipedia page, is what happened.
I just did a comb over of it.
I've known you for how long?
By the way, speaking of Wikipedia,
how many hours have we spent together?
Will you tell these guys and our listener one of my favorite thing you ever did regarding Wikipedia? What you did to our friend Justin Theroux? Do you remember that?
I did one to John Krasinski where I wrote that his family, they were the founders and owners of Craisins, you know, the cranberry raisin. And it's called Craisins because of Krasinski. And he removed that like before I was even finished typing it. He went on and removed it. And what did I do to Justin? I forget what I wrote on his.
You wrote and you buried it like halfway through. So you'd really have to get in there to see it. But you wrote, and Mr. Theroux cries when he ejaculates.
Yeah, that's probably still up.
It only lasted about an hour or so. We did this on his birthday, I think. Remember when we screenshotted it and sent it to him and said happy birthday?
And the most interesting thing about that is, you know, I know you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to screw with Wikipedia. It's a sacred text. And you're also not supposed to write on your own Wikipedia page. But as I recall, we were sitting at that table, and I tried to change something on on Jen Aniston's page as a joke, and it would not allow it. It actually, like...
She's got a lock on it?
Yeah, there's something, I don't
know. Secret Service showed up at your house.
It was weird. And then it was interesting to see which celebrities get locked and which don't.
Oh, really?
And I think it puts you in a second tier, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I think there's ads out there soliciting changes on mine.
All right, so now, so that was hijinks during your radio world, and then there was this transition.
Yeah, I got fired from every radio station, including that one, and that's why I got fired from that station. I don't think it was a prank. I think I wrote one of these 80s parody songs about the owner of the Seattle Mariners, and the Mariners were not happy, and they canceled their advertising, and then the ad agency, which handled McDonald's, interestingly, canceled McDonald's advertising, and $8,000 sounds like, you know, it sounds like a joke, like they lost $8,000 in advertising. Sounds like nothing, but at the time it was,
that was the week.
About half my annual salary, yeah, right. and the salespeople at the radio station were none too pleased.
No. Mm-hmm. But surprisingly, television came for you, and you pushed it off and pushed it off, said no thank you, no thank you, but eventually you did say yes to win Ben Stein's money. Why did you say yes there as your first television show?
And what were like one or two of the things that you were like, that's not for me?
You know, I never imagined I'd be in television. I was a radio disc jockey, and my dream was to do morning radio in a major market like L.A. or Chicago or whatever. That's really what I wanted to do.
Like the wacky dudes that are like, hey, good morning, to drive time.
The morning Skeeter.
And, yeah.
Yeah, not like that. But I was on Kevin and Bean's show on K-Rock for 5 years here in L.A. And while I was on that show, I would get calls from TV producers asking me to audition for things. And they were almost always dumb things that I knew weren't going to work. So if there was any upfront money, I probably would have gone for some of these jobs. But I remember one show was called Pop Quiz. And it basically you had to determine which stories about celebrities were real and which were not real. And I realized very quickly that because the show taped like 6 months in advance, the show would make no sense when it went on air, and there was really no way to verify whether the stories were real in the first place, and that the show would not sell and would be a disaster. So my first thing, I wanted to make sure it was good. And in fact, when a guy named Michael Davies pitched me Win Ben Stein's Money, I didn't know who Ben Stein was. And he said, he's the guy in Ferris Bueller's Day Off who says, Bueller, Bueller. And he explained the premise of the show.
You were like, I'm in.
That's exactly, I was.
Bueller guy, I'm in.
I did say that. I really did. I said, that's a funny title. And the game itself sounds like fun.
And then I'm sure you were shocked like us to learn about his actual legitimacy.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, he wrote for Nixon. He's a law professor, all of these things. And he knows a lot of things. So he was hard to beat. And he and I just happen to have very good chemistry. And that was my first television show.
Do you still talk to him at all?
We email about once a week, yeah.
Come on.
That's
really
nice.
Yeah. Sometimes more.
Do you think he'd rather play Win Jimmy Kimmel's Money now? Probably.
He's doing pretty well for himself. But he, you know what? I actually haven't heard from him for a few weeks because he watches the show.
Maybe you should drive around the house.
He watches the show every night. And I haven't been doing the show this summer, so there's less commentary on what's going on in the show.
Are you missing it right now, given all that's going on? Although I guess there's never a moment when nothing's going on. But what is that like when you take a little break, you know, stuff happens, and do you come up with like a bit you'd like to do or a joke you'd like to tell, and then you get frustrated that, oh, damn it, we're not on tonight?
Yeah, there are moments where you see like Melania not grabbing Donald's hand or Mike Pence making some ridiculous speech or, you know, Steve Bannon perhaps getting arrested in the exactly as Arrested Development began, that you think, oh, I could make something of this. But ultimately, it's more fun to do nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Right. All right. So from Ben Stein's Money, we went to The Man Show. Could you do The Man Show today?
Oh.
Yes.
Really?
It would be 10 times as popular. Of course I could.
It would be.
Yes.
Well, what network would it be on?
And well, we'd have no advertisers, but I don't think...
It'd be streaming.
I don't think even any of the streaming services would be interested in the show, but I think you'd be able to figure out a platform for a show like that.
Yeah. I bet you they would pick it up, right? Somebody definitely would.
You'd put it out on YouTube and it would like...
Yeah, it is, you know how people are. It's like the less corporate America wants you to see something, the more you want to see something.
Right, yeah.
Of course, it's a show that at the time, Adam Carolla and I, we quit that show. You know, we were sick of doing the show. We realized that the audience was not necessarily getting what we wanted them to get from it. And I remember really when we looked at each other and knew the show was over, Adam was talking about some dickhead, like dad of a friend he had when he was a kid. And he was using this as an example of what a not interesting, funny person the dad was. He goes, "Hey, this kid's daddy always said to me, opinions are like assholes. Everyone has one." And the audience laughed. As if that was the first time they heard that. And we looked at each other like, we got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Now, so I apologize that I did see the show, but it's been a while. I forget. Basically, it was unapologetic misogyny, but meant to be sort of satirical, a la the Stephen Colbert Report sort of mocking way.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was blurrier than that. It was just like, I don't know, it was more like... I think Al Bundy would be a character that would be closer to what we're doing. It was just like a celebration of all the stupid shit guys do and like. And right, yeah. Also, we used Oprah kind of as our touchstone. I mean, at the time, my ex-wife was watching Oprah every day and then yelling at me when I got home from work for things she'd seen on Oprah. And this is Oprah before it was kind of a celebrity vehicle, you know, where Julia Roberts would be on talking about gardening. This was like when, like your husband's on the down low kind of Oprah. And so
like Donahue.
I kind of had enough of that. And I went into a meeting with some producers who wanted me to do a daytime talk show for women. And I knew that not even my wife liked me and that would not fly. And Carolla and I had been doing radio together and we decided to do the opposite of that right. show.
And it was on for a while, wasn't it?
It was on for 4 seasons with us, and then they kept doing it for another season with Joe Rogan and Doug Stanhope took over as the host of that show.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
We get support from Happy Egg. I love starting my morning off with farm-fresh eggs full of flavor. At Happy Egg, all of their hens roam on 8 or more acres of land, leaving no mystery to why their eggs are the best. These hens are raised on 8-plus acres. I got to keep it down because if my hens find out, they don't have 8-plus acres. My hens only have like 3/4 of an acre. And they're going to go on strike. Anyway, all of their hens are cared for by small family farmers and live their best hen lives day in and day out. All of this results in eggs with plump orange yolks that are full of flavor. I just, as I mentioned, I like to kick off my morning with farm fresh eggs. The difference is so glaring between an egg from Happy Egg and an egg that just came from clearly some kind of like sad factory. And you just have to taste it for yourself. If you're a fan of eggs, which I am, do yourself this favor and try Happy Egg eggs. You will not be disappointed. You will notice the difference immediately. Get with the Happy Eggs. They're so good. Next time you're at the store, look for the yellow carton. Choose Happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com/smartless to find a store near you. And if you come by the house, don't mention it to my aunts. Thank you to Organic Valleys for supporting the show. I'm just finishing up a little cottage cheese here. See, the thing is, I'm always on the hunt to find the best dairy products. But so many options out there. Which one do you choose? With Organic Valley, you can feel good choosing their dairy products. Their products are ethically sourced from small family farms where cows spend lots of time grazing outside on organic pasture. Organic Valley Dairy doesn't come from those big factory farms. Their farmer families are real people who care about people, animals, and nature. It just tastes better. You can taste the organic. For me, look, I'm a coffee guy, okay? Guilty as charged. Every morning, I do the same thing, which is I come downstairs, I make my coffee, and the thing that this so important ingredient is my half and half. And I just happen to choose organic Valley half and half, even before they started supporting the show. I mean, talk about a match made in dairy heaven. And I also happen to enjoy their eggs and their butter and their other products too. So I was going to say, so sue me, but so don't sue me. When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you enjoy a great tasting organic dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals they call it home. And do not ask me to convert that to hectares. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challenger, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who has taken her husband Art and transformed him into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt him out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a Challenger event close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. Her strategy takes a turn when he finds himself standing across the net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Past and present collide and tensions run high. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at ChallengersMovie.com.
So when I see you like hosting the Emmys again this year, which I can't wait for, and see how that's gonna go virtually, right?
Yeah.
And doing that, doing Millionaire, doing your show, because your show is such a grind, I can't imagine. And I know you've heard me say this to you a million times, and other people say, how do you do that every single day? You have to, it just seems like such a mountain to climb every
day.
You
call Jimmy every day and say that.
Yeah, I do.
How are you still alive? Again, I watched last night. How did you do it last night? With a continental accent.
And he's like, fuck, man, I'm taking this really personally. How are you?
Hey, it's Sean again. I just saw...
You should kill yourself with this schedule.
But because it's such a grind, because you're always out there, do you still get a rush like to do the hosting gigs? You, it seems like you so
no.
love working. Is that
no,
true? Or is it just like a...
No rush.
No, I love it. You don't, right?
Rush don't. And he's laughing. If it goes great, I'm like, okay, good. That's done.
I asked you this the other day, and again, I think I may have blacked out during your answer, so remind me. You've got to definitely take a little bit of a private, you're way too humble to do it outwardly, but inside, you must smell the roses about where you are, what you've done. I mean, we just kind of went through a little bit of your early career. I mean, you are absolutely at the top of your mountain. You haven't done any sort of gymnastics to your personality. Like, you've stayed who you are, and you are at the top of what you do. There's got to be some kind of a rush with that. Yes? I mean, you should be very proud. I'm sure you are.
I definitely am aware of how fortunate I am. I was a radio guy, as I mentioned, and a lot of my friends who, you know, people who hired me to work with them are, you know, they're not doing anything now. Right. That business dried up. And I am so lucky that I happen to be doing radio in Los Angeles, where television producers contacted me, and to have some, you know, because if I'd been doing the same thing in Detroit,
right,
you know, I don't know what I'd be doing right now. I really have no idea. Maybe I'd be working at an ad agency or something, but the radio business is a tough one. And it is weird when you do look at a Wikipedia page and to see these things and to go like, wow, I've done a lot of stuff. It's humbling for sure. And I don't take it for granted. And I do know how lucky I am. And I do think that luck plays a huge part in all of this. And I think, you know,
for sure. Look at Sean.
Yeah. Look at me.
but let me say this, Jimmy, I've said this to you before. You know, I remember we did a sketch once for your show, or maybe it was for the Emmys or something.
Oh, for our post-Oscar show, yeah.
Post-Oscar show with the Batman, and you had Ben Affleck, and then you had Henry Cavill and whatever, and then I came on, and then they were like, no, you're not Batman and whatever. And
I was in it too, fuckface.
I wasn't. I was.
Yep.
Dude, yeah, I don't know.
I was a superhero. Yep.
But you know,
no, that was a different bit, Jason.
That was for his family for like a Christmas. Anyway, so this is for major broadcast post Oscar show, huge ratings, huge. And Ivanka is the best. Tom Brady wants to date her. Sorry, I just got lost. That became a. Anyway, but you did. You were acting in it. You were playing like this sort of dumb guy. Like you didn't know what was going on, and you were trying to. And I said to you at the time. I don't know if you remember. There were a lot of actors, and I was like. You were the best actor on that set. You were the best in the scene. Did you ever, and I really for real mean this, did you ever think, did you want to become like more of a, did you ever think, fuck, I should have done sketch, I should have gone to SNL, or I wanted, did, was that something that you ever wanted to do because, or no?
No, not at all.
Okay, so next question. I have some, a follow-up question.
Yeah, okay. It is not something I wanted to do. It's not something that I feel like I'm good at. I appreciate you saying that. I think, Will, that was probably the only time I bothered to actually learn my lines before we shot. I almost never... I marvel at the idea that other people know their lines. I will write a script myself, and then I can't remember what I'm supposed to say. I did a local TV thing in Seattle when I was starting out. It was one of these things where they get the disc jockeys to host the Friday night horror movie. And I watched it back. I looked at it and I made a very honest assessment of myself. I decided I am terrible on television. I should not be on television. And I really better make this radio thing work. And I'm not joking. I really did. I looked at it and I said, okay, I'm bad at that. And I can't do that. And so I should just figure out how to do this radio thing. And it never, like, you know, being in drama. I was in drama in high school. I took one semester. I know, in college, rather. I took a semester of acting in college. And the teacher pulled me outside and threatened to have me expelled from Arizona State University. And I'm not kidding. She pulled me outside and it's funny, more than anything, I was interested that she could do that. She said, you're making the other students uncomfortable because I was just making fun of everybody the whole time.
Yeah.
And you are making them insecure and you are a detriment to this class. And perhaps you should join a sketch comedy group or something because you are funny, but this is not appropriate. And I was like, really? You can? She said, and I, you know, I can have you thrown out of the school. And I said, you could do that? She's like, yeah. I was like, oh, how about that?
Well, you know what? Well, one time, that's so similar. One time Jason was doing the Heart to Heart, a movie of the week, and the SAG came on set and they threatened to have him kicked out of SAG. Isn't that a true story?
I had to give them my card for 4 weeks.
By the way, I do want to get back to Jimmy. And I want to say one thing, which was you asked him, you said, do you ever get excited or whatever? Do you ever get a charge or a thrill or some bullshit?
I said Rush.
Rush. Do you ever get a Rush?
Great band.
And I will say great band, Geddy Lee. Anyway.
Canadian.
But what I wanted to say was, I wanted to ask you, I know you might not get a Rush and you kind of laughed like Rush. And I know it's your job, but when you hosted the Oscars that time, that there was the big snafu at the end when Warren Beatty read the wrong thing and then all that whole thing. And then you brought those people.
You're right. I did enjoy
into
that.
The theater. And I could see in the moment you were so enjoying it. I couldn't wait to talk to you about it because you were so filled with glee.
Wait, what happened?
When things go wrong.
Tell me what happened.
He opened the side
door. So wait, but Warren Beatty got the wrong envelope? Is that what happened?
Yeah, he said La La Land, but it was...
Moonlight, right?
Moonlight, yeah. Do you not remember that?
So, yeah, but what were the mechanics of it? He got the wrong envelope?
Just the show collapsed. There was mass confusion. Nobody knew what to do.
He read the wrong Best Picture. Anyway, that's not the...
We didn't know what happened.
Damon, you're killing me. No, but no, he...
There were like 11 minutes of just pure confusion and...
It was tremendous.
Yeah.
The best part about it was I was sitting at a table. I was at that Vanity Fair party, and I was sitting at a table with Mick Jagger, of course.
Sure.
And laughing with Mick Jagger, who I don't know at all and have not spoken to since, obviously, about what was going on. And the whole time I'm just watching. It really started with the moment you let those people on the street. He opened the side door and he brought a tour in. They had no idea, and he brought them into the theater. And then watching all the people in the front kind of pretending to be cool with it, but they're not. and they're bummed that you're kind of ruining their big party, but simultaneously smart enough to know that they're on camera, so they don't want to reveal how pissed off they are, and it's such fucking bullshit, as you know. And then, and watching you experience it, and knowing in the split second that you're enjoying exactly that dynamic was so fucking great, and then it went all the way to the end with the mishap with the name. That you loved. You love mayhem.
I will tell you, this is something I don't think I've ever explained to anyone, but every time I do an award show or a big show like that, you know, everything's written and we work hard and try to make sure everything is as good as it can possibly be. But I always allow myself one moment in which we just roll the dice and we have no idea. It could be a complete disaster. It could be great. There's an unknown element, because I think when you have that, it makes the show more interesting. Right. And everyone who complains that the Oscars, whatever, these people who complain that, like, oh, it's boring, it's long, it's whatever. And then you throw something like that into the mix and they're like, well, that shouldn't have been in there. You know, they want it both ways. Right. But I do like that. No one enjoys the feeling of bombing more than I do, because I almost feel like I'm watching a prank happen to me.
Yeah.
And I do get a thrill out of it.
Who was the comic that would go out there and bomb on purpose? There was a stand-up that did that. And I just thought that was just so bold.
Oh, Brody Stevens. Yeah.
Yeah, Brody Stevens.
And it just makes the audience uncomfortable. And like, it's basically performance art. Yeah. I mean, I just think
Galifianakis is the same way too. He loves to bomb and he loves to be, you have a similar sensibility. I think all you guys do, and I think it's part of the deal. Most people that we know that we like are people who love it when the joke's on them, and you, because it's fucking funny.
It all has to do with security, right? You don't give a shit.
Well, it's also understanding the basics of comedy, which is that it's all vulnerability, right?
I do care. I definitely give a shit, and you know, whatever. But there's just something very funny to me about being in the middle of a situation that is not going well. And I'll take that into my regular life. You know, I look ahead so that I can look back. I know that this is going to be funny when I tell it to someone.
Right.
And it makes the bad experiences easier.
That gets us to this year's Emmys. Can we talk a little bit about, because I'll bet you this will air right before that.
And Jason,
yes,
is nominated twice.
That's right.
I have not checked.
At least twice.
I have not
checked.
Three
times. I think best show, best director, best actor.
Oh, is it three?
Is this news? Wait, the nominations are out? No, guys. Now, listen, Jimmy, this is going to be a very atypical year for the Emmys in that it will
be... Someone's going to die.
Will be...
That's the roll of the dice.
So it'll be on television, but that will be beamed from computers, much like your show is every night, right? Or any television show is right now.
I mean, it will be beamed from computers, but if you think about it, all television shows are.
Right.
This will take place in a big theater.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say.
Okay.
What theater, but it will. And we won't necessarily have an audience.
Okay.
And
well, because all I imagine when I read that this is going to happen, the Emmys virtually, is how embarrassing it might be to have everybody on the Zoom who are nominated, and then the winner, and then does everybody just click off? I don't know. How does that work? You just click stop video?
Yeah.
Leave meeting?
Leave meeting.
I hope so. I mean, it would be bad if they just stayed on the losers the whole time. But you could do that when you're in a studio audience too. You know, you do kind of stay with the winner. I think that's
right. But so with what you were saying about really what the serious adult work that happens to make sure that the product is good for the audience, where you guys work so hard to make sure everything is pleasurably predictable and it's all buttoned up, but then you let it kind of wobble a little bit sometimes. How much can you build a predictable broadcast of this year's Emmys when I would assume so much is up in the air as far as the mechanics of it all? Is it all pretty clear to you guys, or are you kind of still kind of figuring it out?
It's about 67% clear.
Okay.
You know, we know that we're going to give out the awards. We know that there's going to be a monologue. There won't be a ton of energy in the room. That we know that's going to be, you know, it's, you know, that end of the Oscars where everyone was silent and confused. That's going to go on for 3 hours.
I can't wait for that. That's going to be my favorite part.
So the runtime will be the same.
The runtime will be the same.
you know how like baseball pipes in fake crowd noise now?
Baseball. Name another sport.
You've got, well, what about like the DNC and the RNC will have aired by now. And like, so it's kind of the same type of effort, right? They're all trying to figure out how to do this without a big room and a big audience. Are you getting any ideas from the DNC?
Yeah, I think mostly the ideas are what not to do. Not that they haven't put together a pretty good show. I think they have, but there are a lot of really deathly silent moments on that show. And I don't think, but that's politics. You can get away with that. I don't think I'll be able to get away with that. So I think,
Jason, are you going to go, Jason? Are you going to get dressed up in a tux at home with Amanda next to you?
Yeah, I have no idea. It's all in real time conversations right now. And I think it's a combination of us, the nominees, waiting to hear from Jimmy, the show, about what they want. And then Jimmy, the show, is waiting to see what the talent is all comfortable with. About it's a really interesting thing that the community's trying to figure out right now. And there's a good spirit to it.
I'd hope that if you do wear the tux on the top, that you'll keep the pajama bottoms on the bottom.
Yeah, that's what we're thinking. Just waist up, dress up, waist up. That's all you need.
It's a good slogan for this year's show.
Dress up, waist up.
Yeah.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartlist. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Hey, listener, it's Jason Bateman. You know him for putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his new podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. His new podcast, in collaboration with us here at Smartless Media, also features longtime This American Life contributor Elna Baker as his co-host. Together, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surf 100-foot waves, ride 600-mile-per-hour rocket sleds, and wrestle crocodiles for fun. On Pretty Sure I Can Fly, Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational Hold My Beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Get to the chopper. I'll be back. Listen, I gotta tell ya, of all guests we've had on SmartList, I don't know if we've had a bigger icon on our podcast than Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, what a treat it was talking to that guy. Arnold is an inspiration, from having reached the heights of bodybuilding to then conquer Hollywood and become a global movie star. Oh, and for his third act, he oversaw the world's fifth largest economy as governor of California. The man has truly done it all. In our interview, he shares the secret of how he's able to accomplish what he puts his mind to, what motivates him to keep working out all these years, and the extreme generosity that he received after arriving in America. You gotta listen to this episode to hear what it's like to be Chris Pratt's father-in-law and how Arnold's first comedy, Twins, has made him more money than any other film he's done. Hint, he's also a great businessman. Give it a listen if you haven't. Bye, Seps.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker
lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
All right, so speaking of entertaining shows for the audience, you had a great show in Texas. It was just you and one other incredible politician that you referred to as Blobfish.
Oh, yeah.
So Blobfish wanted to kick your ass at a basketball game. His name's Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
You got very close to beating him, but ultimately did not win.
That's a nice way of putting it.
you lost 11-9, and I remember that you... You couldn't walk for a week after that back home here.
Yeah, there was a big mistake, and I think that...
That reminds me a lot, Jason. Didn't you say that camping trip with Leif, you couldn't walk for a week after?
Yeah.
Sorry,
well,
keep going.
The walking was fine. The sitting was tough.
I think that the mistake that I made was not having no fouls. We decided there'd be no fouls called because in my head I was imagining him calling fouls on everything and it just being like just boring and going on forever. So I said, let's just have no fouls. And I thought that we would play in a reasonable way, but I should have known that Ted Cruz was not going to play in a normal way because he doesn't do anything normal. And I mean, it was practically like he would put me, and I'm not exaggerating, like if you were to watch the raw video, he would put me in a bear hug while I was dribbling. I mean, it was just like, are we even playing basketball now? What's going on?
That must have taken forever.
What's he like as a person?
He's a nice enough guy. I mean,
what's he like as a hugger? Is he a good hugger?
He's a friendly enough guy. And, we raised money for charity and the whole thing was a positive overall. But I would have liked to have won that game, and I was ashamed of myself. I made the mistake of trying to really become a good basketball player the week before the game.
Sure.
So
sure.
When I was, when I got there, I was already in bad shape physically, and when I left, I was in worse shape physically.
And what stiffened up on you? I forget, was it your back or your legs afterwards?
Nothing really. I tore something in my pelvis. So.
Oh God! Yeah.
So your pelvis stiffened up.
Yep. Copy. So any chance?
Listen, I'm just trying to keep it rolling along here, Jason.
What about a rematch on that? Let's get a rematch going and let's televise it and let's raise money for some sort of political race in Texas.
Well, here's the thing: the reason that I did it is because. Obviously, I wanted Beto to win that mm-hmm. and I knew that that was unlikely and that Ted Cruz had a big lead. But I, somewhere in the back of my head, I thought, if I can get him to throw up on television during this game, this is going to be a devastating visual, and perhaps it is just the Hail Mary that we need to win that seat.
Do you think he got close?
I got close, but...
Jimmy loves chaos, and that's the best example. That's such a perfect... I totally believe that.
Yeah.
So all the great humor that's on your show, the incredible writing staff, congratulations again for another nomination. Now, at the top of the heap there, you've fallen in love with one of those top writers over there, Molly McNierney, and you've married her, you have procreated with her.
Yeah.
So tell us what it is like to work with your wife. The complications of that, the pluses, the minuses, and try not to talk yourself into a divorce right now, but see if you can wiggle
Jason
in some
wants to know, what's it like to like your wife?
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm fascinated.
Well, I think it's great. I honestly don't, there are no negatives as far as working together goes. We have the same vacation schedule. I feel like I will sometimes dream a joke or think of something in the middle of the night. And then what I do is, because I cannot hold it in, I will, I won't say I make noise, but I won't be as quiet as I normally am until I could see that she is stirring. And then once she just happens to be awake, I'll uh-huh. tell her what I thought. And part of it, in my deep in my skull, I think that I go like, well, this is her job. So, you know, it is okay for me to do this. Like, that's how I rationalize it.
So you're doing pitch sessions in the middle of the night because you can't wait till the morning?
She could sue you for overtime.
Yeah. Or just write it down like somebody does with dreams.
I found that when I write things down in the middle of the night, I have no idea what they say the next day. I can't even, they don't even look like letters. They're it's just pure nonsense.
But you can articulate it to your wife.
And it drives me, she remembers, it drives me crazy when I think something was really funny and I write it down and then I cannot for the life of me figure out what it was the next
day. And then you narcoleptic right back to bed and she's up working on the joke.
Exactly. I go right back to sleep and then she's like, what is going on in my life?
Oh, that's perfect.
Sean, you told me the other week that you woke up and you wrote something down and then you read it in the morning and it was just simply said, do you like whipped cream?
and then in the middle of the night, I sleepwalked to Trader Joe's and bought 10 cans of whipped cream.
Oh, I just did whipping hits all night to get back to bed.
Whipping hits. I whipped it good.
Yeah. All right, we've taken enough of your time. You're incredible.
I only have another 3 hours, by the way. I'm very busy right now. So.
You're not doing a show. When are you back on the show?
I'll be back the Monday after the Emmys.
Oh, great. Which are when?
Which are, September 21st? Well, if this is airing right now, we'll all know when they are. But, yeah, right around there.
Jimmy, because I'm not going to have you for at least another week, I just wanted to take a second to say thank you. I just had the incredible opportunity of guest hosting your show during this guest host kind of revolving door.
Thank you for doing it.
And it was super, super, super fun. And it was really, truly an honor to share the same space that you occupy. So,
and thank you for participating in our little project with Norman Lear.
Yes,
live
that's
in
right.
front of a studio audience.
That was a blast.
The thing you won the Emmy for last year?
Yes, and we are nominated again this year. And
Mazel.
Yeah. Are you going to do more of those?
I would like to, yeah. We have to get a live studio audience back first, but it would be fun to do more of them. It was a lot of fun to do.
Yeah.
Jimmy,
I hope you guys continue doing this podcast because it's a lot of fun.
This is the last one.
This is probably our last one,
I really just like hearing you guys bust each other's balls. That's I don't think you need the guests. I think the guests are optional. I think you should do some episodes without guests.
Look at how much we learned, though. You know?
What did we really learn, though? Not much.
What did we learn?
I learned about your narcolepsy.
We learned that radio is dead.
We learned all the things that we would have learned if there was no Wikipedia.
Right. Now, will you go nigh-nigh right now? After this is
to
over?
Sleep?
Yeah.
It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
It's 1:20.
No, I'm gonna stay up till dark tonight.
All right.
I figure.
Jimmy, we love you crazy.
Love you,
we
man.
Love your wife. We love your kids, your
Thank
show,
you.
Everything.
Thanks, dude.
And love your generosity for saying yes to coming and talking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. Take care.
Night night.
Night night.
Good night.
Night night, apple pie.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, buddy.
Bye.
How lucky are we that we are buddies with that guy?
Love him.
I have less friends. The older I get, the less friends I have. As I'm sure that's not unique to me. You know, people get busy with their families and their careers and whatnot. Like when I was a kid, I used to have like 40 friends, but now I've got like you two and maybe three others. And Jimmy's one of those. And I feel like I don't need any more if I've got quality folks like you guys. He's a good
likewise.
Dude.
He's such a great, I feel the same way. And I do, as you know, I do very little socializing.
Mm-hmm.
I get a lot of flack for that.
Emailing.
I know. And
or phone calls.
What I do, it's like you guys or Jimmy and you guys, like that's it. I just don't do it. And it's important. But at least when I do it, I get to do it with quality folks, I will say. So that's the
And Jimmy's one of those.
Yeah, it's pretty admirable that he works as hard as he does and works with his being a dad as much as he does and a husband and still has time to do a podcast every once in a while.
Yeah, and I think he's super successful and super accessible because he's unapologetic about who he is and his beliefs and his opinions, and I think people are drawn to that, and I am.
One of you guys said, and it's true, that he's – certainly in the time I've known him, but he's just always stays the same. He is the same guy. He's such a genuine, authentic guy. He's one of those few, and we know what it's like, and we know a lot of people in this town and a lot of people who do what we do. And that's not always the case. A lot of people who are perceived as one way by the public and then who they really are is completely different. And there are lots of instances that we know of that we've all talked about who are like that, who people are like, no way, that person's a dick. They seem so nice. And Jimmy is one of those people who is just so genuinely who he is.
There's no switch that he throws when he's in front of the camera. He's exactly the same guy. He's so comfortable in his skin, which is and so surprising to hear that he, you know, was originally when he first saw himself on television. You told us that story. He was like, I look uncomfortable. I don't like the way I look, or I'm not comfortable. It's amazing that he is like that's. For me as a viewer, that's why I'm attracted to, you know, watching his show. And especially at that time of night where you don't want any nonsense. You want somebody, you want to welcome them into your your house if they put you at ease. And he's always at ease with himself. And it's infectious.
I think people would be surprised to learn, like, Will, when they meet you in person, that's not your real skin.
Yeah, or hair.
I'm not comfortable in my real skin.
Yeah.
That's why I don't show them my real skin.
Right.
Yeah, because
Or the wires. The wires and everything
your back. That keeps it together. But you know what? When you've had as much work done as I have, which is, and I'll admit it, extensive, you know, it takes a lot of, it's a lot of rubber bands and scotch tape over here. To, you know, show my
game. And you've lived through two world wars.
Sure. I've been around a minute. A minute.
Don't look a day over 40. Unbelievable.
I remember, you know, when I guest hosted his show back when he took a leave right after Billy was born. And I remember just, we don't even need to have this on the show, but I just remember being so thinking about what a great guy he is as I was hosting this show and saying, Jimmy's not here because his son Billy's in the hospital. And then immediately starting to well up as I'm delivering the fucking monologue in front of the audience. And I'm like, he's such a fucking great guy who deserves only great things. And he's such a wonderful person and love him so much. And you just think like, you know.
This is a good lesson about, you know, want to read the monologue through first.
No, I like to wing it.
Up there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like to wing it.
Cold reading the monologue while we're rolling is not a good idea.
Yeah, you know what? My president does that. And and he's the president. So.
That takes us right to goodbye.
Smart.
If you like SmartLess, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.